This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on. This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on. Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm June Sims with Bob Doty in Washington. Today on the program, we report on efforts in the West African nation of Togo to protect the small country's rich cultural and language heritage.
I think what we have to be very worried about it because today, even when people move back to the village, they don't use the language of the village as it is.
But first, we hear about older Liberian women who are learning to read and write. Here is Bob Doty.
A United Nations agency estimates that 516 million of the world's women cannot read and write. The UN Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, says programs are needed to help illiterate women learn, although they are past school age. Women make up two-thirds of all illiterate adults. The majority of these women live in West Africa. Many girls in that area never go to school. But in Liberia, a new education program is giving women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s another chance to learn to read and write. Pauline Rose heads UNESCO's Worldwide Monitoring Report on Education for All. She says being illiterate causes huge problems in daily life. She notes situations like not being able to read directions on a medicine bottle or a number on a bus.
So there are real practical concerns about when women are illiterate.
Ms. Rose says illiteracy affects not only the women, but also their families, because women are often the main caregivers of children. She says when women are illiterate, they are less likely to use health services. Some countries, like Senegal, have improved women's literacy rates through government efforts. They tell more girls in primary school and community programs about the importance of education. But there are still many nations where less than one in four women can read and write. They include Niger, Benin, Mali, and Burkina Faso. Ms. Rose says these countries need literacy programs that target women. She says there is a huge need for illiterate young women and adults to have a second chance to read and write. Liberia, for example, has launched a second chance literacy campaign to teach women. The students never went to school, or they were forced to leave school because of 10 years of civil war in the country. Moni Smith is 35 years old. She is a student at the adult literacy school at the Firestone Liberia Natural Rubber Company in Margibi County. Her parents did not send her to school, and she could not read or write. Now she is in the first grade and has those skills. She sells her goods at the market and can now count her profit without help. She says having a second chance at education has changed her life.
Today, I am a happy woman.
I'm very proud.
Liberia's Ministry of Education says 5,000 women currently study in adult literacy programs across the country. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm June Sims. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Experts estimate that by the end of the century, half the 6,000 languages spoken on our planet will have disappeared. In West Africa, academics in Togo are trying to protect the small country's rich cultural and language heritage. Once again, here is Paul Doty.
At the University of Lomé, Professor Nbueke Adovi Goyakwe shows a visitor some video clips of Gen cultural rituals. The professor is a cultural heritage specialist. He is also himself a Gen, one of many ethnic groups in Togo. He is making films of Gen cultural customs with financial help from the United States. He says the Gen have an important place in Togo's history and culture. Gen rituals show how its people see their world, the interaction between the living and the dead, the seen and the unseen. The Gen believe in numerous voodoo deities. But today, Professor Goyakwe says, fewer and fewer Gen children go through voodoo initiation ceremonies. He says that increasingly, the new generation does not recognize the importance of these cultural traditions. He says formal education and the spread of Christianity have reduced their influence. Many young people think traditional practices are uncivilized. And while the Gen language is widely spoken in the capital, Lomé, the professor says it is not taught in schools. Gen is one of about 39 languages spoken in Togo. A specialist in the UNESCO Endangered Language Program says, by the end of this century, more than half of Africa's languages will be gone. The specialist, Anahit Minashan, says a language needs speakers, preferably people who speak it as their mother tongue or first language. But she says a language at least needs people who can speak it as their second language. If there aren't any, she says, a language is extinct. She says languages can die as a result of an increasingly globalized world.
Mostly these days they are economic. People switch to a language or they raise their children in a language which they think will provide for a better economic opportunity in the future.
Ms. Minashan says in Africa, for example, people often switch to larger African languages, not necessarily to English or French. Instead, people might switch to Hausa or Swahili or Wolof. These have more speakers and provide more economic opportunities than their mother tongues. Sociolinguist Kamlan Esezewa says that today, many young urban Togolese switch among several languages. These include the Mina language, spoken in cities,
as a linguist, we have to be very worried about it, because today, even when people move back to the village, they don't use the language of the village as it is.
Thanks to Bob Doty for joining us today. Mario Ritter returns next weekend. I'm June Sims, and that is As It Is.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English. From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Stock prices in the United States and Japan rose sharply in 2013. The rising prices were evidence of investors welcoming efforts to push down interest rates. Low interest rates help to reduce the cost of homes, equipment, and other goods. The leading measure of Japanese stock prices was up 57% last year. That was the best performance for Japan's Nikkei index in many years. In the United States, another stock index, the S&P 500, rose almost 30% in 2013. Another measure of stocks, the NASDAQ Composite Index, rose 38%. The share prices were up, in part, because of actions by the U.S. and Japanese central banks. The U.S. Federal Reserve cut short-term interest rates to almost zero a few years ago. More recently, the Federal Reserve has been working to push down long-term interest rates. The central bank has been buying billions of dollars worth of bonds and other government securities. The bank recently announced it would reduce that program because the economy no longer needs so much help. Nick Ventura is with Ventura Wealth Management, a financial investment company in New Jersey. He calls some of the actions by central banks a global gamble that has worked, at least so far. In 2013, the American economy grew and housing prices rose. At the same time, the jobless rate fell a little. Mr. Ventura says the improving economy meant fewer wild movements in stock prices and fewer worried investors.
Every time that there was the slightest pullback in stock prices, it was rewarded with a fresh round of buying. So there's a growing confidence in the U.S. recovery, and I think that's what really perked up the U.S. economy.
Experts say they saw improvements in consumer and investor confidence toward the end of last year. That sense of trust seems to be making investors more willing to take small risks by purchasing shares of stock. The Wall Street Journal says investors are simply looking for stocks with low prices and the likelihood of strong earnings. Another newspaper, the Financial Times, reports that investments said to offer safety in troubled economic times saw fewer buyers. These investments include gold and government bonds. Some experts predict stock prices will continue to climb in 2014, but at a slower rate than last year. Over in Turkey, a deepening political crisis is affecting the country's stock market. By the end of 2013, Turkey's stock market had fallen more than 20%, while the value of Turkish money hit new lows. Concerns are growing about the effects of the power struggle between the government and the judiciary. More than 20 people, including state officials, have been arrested on corruption charges. Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan dismisses the investigation as part of a plot to bring down his government. Last week, protesters gathered in several cities to demand the resignation of the Prime Minister. Thousands of supporters of Mr. Erdogan held separate demonstrations. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember. Now, VOA Learning English presents a story for the new year. It is called Bright Hill. Our storyteller is Shep O'Neill.
A few days before Christmas, Chantal Yardley visited Jacob Samuels in the old people's home. "Do you know they aim to blow it up?" said Mr. Samuels as he looked out a window. His face was nearly the same red as the hanging Christmas decorations. He was angry at the thought that the house on Bright Hill, the shelter of his happy years when his wife Irma was alive, his house was to be destroyed. The people who bought the house said it would be a fine place to raise their children. If my wife was alive, she would not talk to me for a year. Chantal tried to change the subject. "Do you know it has been almost 30 years?" she asked the old man. "I remember," said Jacob Samuels. "Irma and I spent the whole week before calling the people in the community, trying to put together a welcome for you."
"A week?"
"Yep," answered the old man quietly. "We saw what was going on with the riots in the big cities and all the wrong people with guns farther south. We thought all that was not the friendly American way." Chantal remembered being a little afraid 30 years ago. No black family had ever lived in the Bright Hill community. Her husband, Rafe, was leading the big moving truck, driving their small blue car. Rafe stopped the car when they saw 15 or 20 people in front of their new home on Tully Lane. Someone stepped toward them in the street. Chantal held her throat with fright. Then, a man in front of their new house held up a sign written in big, colorful letters. It said, "Welcome." People motioned with their hands for Rafe to drive on up. When Rafe and Chantal Yardley stepped out onto their new property, people hurried up to them and shook their hands. The man holding the welcome sign said he was Jacob Samuels from the house at the top of Bright Hill. People filled Chantal's and Rafe's arms with sweets, cooked dinners, and more. There was so much food. "What a day that was," said Chantal.
"What a day," agreed Jacob Samuels.
It was a beautiful community. Children could walk to school or play happily up at the Samuels' house, and their parents need not worry if the children were safe. Most important, nobody wanted to move out of the Bright Hill community just because people moved in who were a little different. Remember Mrs. Hancock's picture in the newspaper? Asked Shantel. Sure do, answered Jacob Samuels with a smile. When Mr. and Mrs. Ho came from Vietnam and we drew a little Buddha on their welcome sign. Then the men in white cloth came, said Chantal. One morning, there were men standing in front of the Ho family's house. The men were covered from head to toe in white cloth, with holes cut out for their eyes. One of the men held up a wood cross and set fire to it. All the people in the other houses on Tully Lane ran out their doors and toward Mr. and Mrs. Ho's house. Bob Hobart carried a long iron point African war weapon. Jacob Samuels came running, wearing a silver Swedish war hat, carrying a meat-cutting knife high in his right hand. The men in white cloth were much surprised by this sudden appearance of more than 50 people. White cloth flew everywhere as these men of hate ran off in all directions. Old Mrs. Hancock threw a stick under the feet of a white cloth flying around the corner of her house. The man fell. Mrs. Hancock jumped from her front steps onto the man's back and hit him with an empty flour can. Jake Griffin had to pull her off the man. Later, Jake said he never knew a 78-year-old woman could be that strong. The next day, a newspaper ran a picture of Mrs. Hancock without her false teeth. Under the picture was printed the words, Bright Hill Hero. From then on, everybody in the country knew about Bright Hill. Somebody called it the community that hates hate. That description stuck. Old Mrs. Hancock died the next year. The Alavis bought her house. They had fled Iran when the Ayatollah took over. The sons from Kunming, China, moved into the community soon after. Then the Ankolis from Uganda, the Kumars from Bombay, India, the Santiagos from Nicaragua. There were parties for all the new people, in the streets or in the house on Bright Hill. And after the Battle of the White Cloths, the community held some kind of celebration almost every week. Now, someone was going to tear down the house on Bright Hill. In the quiet week between Christmas and New Year's, Jacob Samuel sat and thought about his old house. On a day not long after, Chantal called Jacob Samuels. Rafe says maybe the town officials can declare the house a historic building, said Chantal on the telephone. That way it could not be torn down. He is going to talk with a friend in the government. The next morning, Rafe hurried off to talk with the town officials. Chantal was leaving for work. A funny figure on a bicycle came riding up Tully Lane, wearing a shiny hat and a big red cloth tied around his neck. Chantal laughed. It was Jacob Samuels. Mr. Samuels waved and shouted, They thought no one would notice if they came in soft-like and started tearing down the house. He pointed behind him at a big earth mover and two trucks coming up Tully Lane. Mr. Samuels got off the bicycle at his old front door and pulled his special meat knife from under his neckcloth. The workman driving the earth mover tried to talk with him, but Mr. Samuels would not let the man come close. The workmen talked together quietly for a while. Then they climbed into their vehicles, started their engines, and drove toward different parts of the little house. Mr. Samuels was everywhere at once, throwing himself in front of the earth mover or a threatening truck. He moved very fast for an old man. Again, other people in the community came out of their doors just as on the day of the White Claws. Fred Jansen wanted to know what was going on. Chantal told him some men had come to tear down the Samuels house on Bright Hill. "In a pig's eye, not if I can help it," Fred shouted, and he broke into a run. Jacob Samuels took the red cloth from around his neck to wave and defend his house like a Spanish bullfighter. Then one of the trucks drove straight at Jacob. Jacob was slow to move. The truck just missed hitting him. The driver could not turn the truck in time and ran into the side of the house on Bright Hill. The little house shook. Everybody stopped short, even the trucks and earth mover. Rafe Yardley drove his blue car slowly through the crowd, stopped, and climbed out. He held up a paper. "Judge Martin Klein signed a court order this morning," he said. "Nothing can be done to this house until Judge Klein has a hearing about it. The town officials will meet after the New Year holiday. There are enough votes so Bright Hill will be named as a historic house." Jacob Samuels looked at the sad little house with its now broken windows and fallen stones. "Now I have to buy it back," he said. "But I do not have enough money." "We have some saved," said Rafe as he looked toward Chantal. Then Mrs. Sun stepped forward. "We have some extra too, Mr. Samuels. You will take. And my husband can help with the work." All over the little hill, people began to speak up, offering money and willing hands to work, even one of the workmen. Church bells far off played "Joy to the World." Rafe stepped to his open car. "The people of France make a wonderful drink called champagne," he smiled. "I was saving this for New Year's Eve, but December 29th is close enough." Rafe opened some bottles and passed them into the crowd. The church bells far away played "Should Old Friendships Be Forgot." Then Rafe turned to Jacob Samuels, held a bottle high, and said in a loud voice, "Here's to Jacob Samuels and all the people of the Bright Hill community. You are the spirit of the real America. And the voices of the Yardley family and the Sun family and the Kumar family and the voices of all the people who came to Bright Hill from all around the world rose up to meet the bells with happy shouts and bright song." ¶¶
everybody, wherever you are in the world, all of us at VOA Learning English would like to thank you for your good wishes. And to all, a Happy New Year.